All right. Well, along with the top 40 music, of course, you had to have a way to know what the hits were to get the right songs on the air. And then also there was some reporting back to various people, too, right?
About 1964, at the time KSO was going out of the format, we really made an effort. And there's two guys here that should really be mentioned. One was Jim Michaels, who was the first music director with me at KIOA, and the second guy was Mike Welch, who was there for a long time. Those guys were in charge of all the music, and we decided we were going to have a very, very accurate survey. We would call all the record shops on Monday to reflect the weekend sales and use an inverted scale to rank the songs. And it was so authentic. We used to distribute it to the state of Iowa. We used to have these little record stores all over Iowa in the pattern. They'd send us an envelope, self-addressed envelope, and each week we would stuff in.
You made them pay for the postage, huh?
Yeah, I just figured that it got out of hand for us to keep up with. And if they really wanted it, they would send us 52 envelopes, and then we would just send it to them. Because it really, they'd change addresses, and it just became a big nightmare. So every Friday, when it'd go right from the printers, they'd put it in the envelopes, and it'd go out all over Iowa. We got a reputation where you could buy your records off the survey. And then in I think it was the 70s, I got this brilliant idea, because a lot of records were being sold in small towns in what they called racks, like at the Kmart store or at the Shopko or whatever it was in the small town, and we couldn't get a hold of the sales because there was no way to contact the people. So I created an account at J.L. Marsh, which was the distributor and one-stop from Minneapolis. They were experimenting with computers, and every time they sold a single 45, they would rip this little tab off, and the little girl had to put it in an envelope and send it back, and they ran it through this computer, which was, I think it was steam-driven. I mean, the thing was huge. But it was the first record indexing that was ever done. And so when I went to Minneapolis one time, I was talking to the Heilitzer people who owned it, and I said, well, that means you know everything that sells in Iowa and all your accounts. Yeah. How could I get that information? And they said, well, we can give you we could create an account for you, and you can find this out. So we created Peter's Records, and we had the ability to see the piece count for all the 45s sold in Iowa and Nebraska. And in turn, there was a lady who worked here at the J.L. Marsh Company in Des Moines, and I would go out every Wednesday, and we'd go to lunch, and she'd run Peter's Records, and I could get a computer tally of what really, really was selling in the whole state, which slowed our survey down quite a bit, which made it more accurate, because we had a lot of phone calls from record promotion people, you know, and you had to keep your feet in reality, and the true reality is the audience is not as fast as the record industry, you know. They're in the supply business, and we're in the demand business. And so what we have to do is stay in pace with the people. And I remember I took a record, I can't remember the group, but it was number one, and I took it down to number 10, and the record industry went bananas. They called us up, and they discredited us and said, you can't do that. It's the number one selling record in America. And why did you do that? And I said, because there's a UPS strike in Iowa, and there hasn't been any product delivered for 2 weeks. That was it. And we knew it because the record people told us that, the retail people who sold the music. So that's how we did the survey. We still called
it. It was accurate. I mean, it
was so accurate because, you know, I wanted an accurate survey. I really did. And in the 70s, we cut it down. We cut the list down from, it was the 9 plus 40 survey for years, and we played a lot of stiffs because it's a lot of product out there. And when the Drake stations became popular, we changed it to the Hit Parade and cut the list down to about 30. And we went through the 70s with about 30 hit records and some oldies.
Now, you, I mentioned some reporting, and there were some trade publications that wanted to know what was going on in various markets. And you reported to ones I'm thinking about, like Gavin Report, that type of thing, right?
The Bill Gavin Report, I think, was the most honest survey If your name was in Bill Gavin, it couldn't appear in anything else in the country. And Bill Gavin was from Wisconsin and Minnesota, and he liked all the Midwestern stations. He knew about the flamethrowers like K-Fire and Bismarck on 550 and WLS and KIOA. He liked those stations that could cover large masses of ground. And so we became a correspondent early on, and he really watched what happened out in the Midwest, because we would develop records that the major markets they just didn't have any local groups developing. They had major groups developing, but a record like In the Year 2525 by Zager and Evans that came out of Lincoln, Nebraska, you know, it started over there and then spread through the Midwest. Well, Gavin liked that, and he was a great gentleman, great guy. And so he kind of made us famous by, well, KIOA says this, and, you know, or all Midwestern stations he seemed to favor. And so that was beneficial to us. And then Billboard found us and gave us so many points if you got on Billboard. And we were a tracker for Billboard and didn't even know it for a long time. And then R&R started. And so when R&R started, then we became a tracker for R&R. And so, I mean, you'd read Des Moines and then New York, you know, and we'd be right up there with the rest of them. So the trades were good then. They helped us get notoriety.
Let's jump back into the 60s just a little bit here. It seems toward the latter part of the 60s, besides doing the record hops, which had been done for a long time, some live bands and some really good local and regional bands came into the scene.
I'm going to tell you something that I've decided. You mentioned that I didn't think KSO could ever beat us a second time around. And here's what I think happened. From the time we, 64, were alone in the format for a period of time, the Beatles came in. And, I mean, we pretty much owned the Beatles because we didn't have to compete very much for the Beatles. But what really happened was we started doing record hops at the extent of that 10,000-watt signal. And I remember I was doing them in the Roof Garden Ballroom in Okoboji, the Starline Ballroom in Carroll. We were in every ballroom all over Iowa, with the exception of Eastern Iowa, where we didn't go. And we were meeting these kids. Youngsy was, every Saturday and Friday night, we were out in droves. Four and five guys. We all had these little hop boxes with the records in them, you know, and we'd go out there and we were working American Legion halls, but we were in all those small towns meeting all those kids. So when those kids came to Des Moines, they already had a favorite radio station before they even got here, because they could sit on the farm or wherever they were in Carroll, Iowa, and listen to KIOA. That was the secret. When they graduated from high school or went to college or whatever, and they came to Des Moines to live and work for the insurance companies, they already had KIOA. Those record hops were probably the most influential things at selling our radio station to all those young people. And, I mean, there were a lot of them. And my rule was very simple. You had to be there. If you were a KIOA good guy, you had to be present to introduce the band. And we did not do them on a percentage basis. We were hired by the ballroom people. We worked for a flat salary. But I can remember driving through lots of snowstorms and stuff on Saturday to get to the Starline Ballroom in Carroll. And it was, 90 miles away. So that's why I wanted to say that about the record ops. It's kind of like the music directors. They never get talked about. Or the production directors. I had two excellent production directors. Art Jones in the 60s and Bert Powley into the 70s. These guys made the radio station go.
You hired Dick Youngs in 66, right?
Mm-hmm. Dick left KSO with Dick Vance, and they went over and tried this FM thing for a while, and it didn't work. And if I get this correct, Youngsy will correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I think he went down to Florida. I think
he did. He left the market for a while after working with Vance and decided he wanted to come back to Des Moines. And he was also involved in a pizza shop with his brother over on the east side for a while.
Youngsy's, I think, was the name of it.
Yeah, Youngsy's, right. And so then when he got back into the radio, he joined us at KIOA. 66, is that what it was?
What's really interesting, he's still here.
Yeah, he is. Still as ornery as he always was, too.
That he is. The music list started to tighten up in the 70s, and I guess the Bill Drake influence had come in, and probably less talk on the radio, right? I mean, it was more play the hits.
Yeah, we never really had rules about it, But because we were doing crush and roll top 40, in other words, out of the jingle to the ramp and talking the ramp, you had to get it in pretty much 7-8 seconds. But it was all part of the forward motion of the radio station. And that Drake era swept every top 40 radio station. Everyone in the country was doing that. And we cut all the jingles to acapellas, and we were just using the front half of the SIG, the KIOA. And we did that for quite some time. The 70s were the most confusing time in music, and top 40 stations couldn't quite figure it out. I mean, you had album rock starting. You had the Beatles moving from a hit single group into an album group. And you had all this flux going on in music. And, I mean, we're sitting there playing the Rolling Stones and Johnny Cash on the same radio station. I don't think you can ever do that again, you know.
I think that's something they forget about, the old top 40. It really was everything. I mean, it was.
Well, yeah, that's what it was supposed to be, the most popular records. And here's Julie, Do You Love Me, surrounded by Stevie Wonder, Signed, Sealed, Delivered, I'm Yours, and Looking Out My Back Door by Creedence Clearwater. Number one was Spill the Wine, Eric Burdon. You know, just tell me how exactly that guy fits in there. But, you know, he was a teen favorite, and he was selling his single, so we played him. I miss it, though. And I'll tell you something. This is my personal observation. That time will never come again because we're so niched. But it was a great thing when you could go into a bar and every song on the jukebox, everybody in the bar knew. And so when you put it in, they'd all sing the same song. And now you can't do that. I don't know if that's good or bad.